Wisconsin, it's finally here. Yuengling, oldest brewery in America, family-owned and operated for six generations, and now officially in Wisconsin. Whether I'm tailgating, watching the game at a sports bar, just kicking back, I'm reaching for a Yuengling. DG Yuengling & Son, Pottsville, PA. Enjoy responsibly.
1-2 pitch. And a called third strike right down the middle with a sinker. Come all without, come all within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Myers out of the stretch, the pitch. And a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Would you like fries with that? 12 in a row for the crew.
Jim, Matt, and Molly continues live from the Marriott here in Middleton. We're here with the Dugout Club. They raised some money for local baseball and softball teams. And Jim Rutledge alongside Molly Brown and Olympic gold medalist Matt Hamilton. We are thrilled to be joined by Lane Grindle, as you heard his calls there. And we are part of the Brewers Radio Network here on ESPN Madison. So we've heard those calls throughout the summer. So, Lane, thanks for taking the time to come out to this event and joining us. What brings you to this event? Why do you want to be a part of it?
Yeah, so 2 years ago I came to this event and was able to be a part of it and really, really enjoyed myself. I'm a baseball fan in general. Obviously, the last 10 years with the Brewers has been really just a total trip for me and been a lot of fun. But I have a 10-year-old son that's involved in youth baseball, so I love it at every level.
Yeah.
I did college baseball for a long time at the University of Nebraska, so I still wish that the Badgers had a baseball program here as well. So I love to get involved with these things whenever I can be. And they asked me to come back again this year. It was a no-brainer for me.
How often do people confuse your voice with Jeff Levering?
A lot. it happens to us a ton. My first year year, and we got a ton of people that were like, you guys sound exactly alike. Even my family would be like, I can't tell you guys apart sometimes. I think I always tell people, if you listen in the big moments, I do think we sound different in those moments, but our talking like this, it's pretty similar. And so when we hired Josh Maurer a couple of years ago, this is a true story, when we were sitting around like, okay, what are the things we're looking for here? One of the things was, we can't sound like Jeff and Lane. We wanted somebody that just, you know, was a little bit different in terms of just when they sat and talked, they didn't sound exactly like us. So we do get that a lot. That's a good question.
That's good. Do you remember calling my first pitch back in 2018?
Oh, my God.
It was an absolute laser, so I'm sure you mentioned
that. I have no doubt it was a laser.
And you think you called it? Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
A little practice.
Now onto the mound, Olympic gold medalist Matt Hamilton.
Wow.
A bit outside.
We did call Kent Sommerfeld throughout a first pitch this year, and I'm pretty sure we called that. And it wasn't – look, I love Kent. He's my guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great first pitch. He'll be the first to tell you. And so we did call that on the air, and it was kind of like, and here's the pitch. Oh, from Kent, yeah.
Have you ever thrown a first pitch?
I never have.
Because it is nerve-wracking.
Oh, I think I would be really nervous. And no matter how much you prepare yourself for it, that moment, you get one shot, right?
I went in way overconfident. I was like, I performed in front of, like, the world at the curling. Like, I can throw a first pitch. And when you get out in the middle of the stadium and you're on the mound, all of that confidence I had was gone. It's just like, please do not put it in the dirt. It's all I went for at that point.
So this is a question I have, because I'll mess up names on the show, but they're like baseball, there's, you know, Peralta, there's Willie Peralta, Freddie Peralta, there's all these names, like, and everything's happening at a faster pace than it here is on the show and everything. How is there a trick to avoid that? How often does that happen? Because there's so many names, and it's part of the charm, obviously, Bob Uecker or Harry Carey, so many people would, if they did make a mistake, just own it. But, like, how do you handle that, and how do you keep it all straight?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I think you just – The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it, and the more that you understand the rosters and who's coming up and who's coming down, because you just kind of live it once you get into the season. But, like, mistakes are made.
Yeah.
I've gotten names wrong. I still will remember this, and I don't know how it turned into this, but when Clay Holmes was first coming up with the Pirates and he was pitching in a game, Levering and I are doing the game in Pittsburgh, and I referred to him as Gavin Holmes, like, three times in an inning, and Jeff's looking at me, and then I realized, like, it's Clay Holmes, not Gavin Holmes. And so we go to break, and I'm like, why would I have called him Gavin? Like, and we're trying to figure it out, and we're racking our brains. We never could figure out why I called him Gavin Holmes, like, three times. And then we realized later on that fall, Jeff had called a Baylor-Kansas football game, and Baylor had a wide receiver named Gavin Holmes, and I watched the game because Jeff was calling it. And for some reason, that name stuck with me, you know, 8 months later or whatever it was. And so you'd never get Clay Holmes' name wrong. Now he's kind of a household name in baseball, but he was a little-known prospect at that point in time. So it does happen, absolutely.
The Freddie Peralta news last week. How should Brewers fans be feeling about this season without him on the team?
Well, I think there's two things that can be true at the same time. You can be disappointed that Freddie Peralta is not a part of your organization, because Freddie Peralta is a world-class human being, a great pitcher for sure, and a big part of the Brewers' success over this long run of success that they've had for the last 9 years, really. But, and for him coming up in 2018, but at the same time, understanding that this is how the Brewers have to operate to continue to be a really good 90-plus win team year over year, and that means they have to make trades that are painful at the time. It's just the truth. The Devin Williams trade in December of 2024 was a painful trade at the time. It ended up working out pretty well for the Brewers because Caleb Durbin ended up being a great piece and a big part of this year's team. You just don't know what Jet Williams or Brandon Sproat are going to be. On paper, they look like guys that Jet Williams looks like the definition of a Brewer in terms of size and speed and everything else that comes with it. And Sproat is a high stuff guy, and Chris Hook's done well with those kind of guys. So I'm optimistic about what those guys can bring to the table, not just this year, but years in advance. But you're going to miss Freddie. Like, you can't pretend that, well, they'll be fine without Freddie. Like, there'll be a little bit of an adjustment to that. They have to hope that their pitching depth, and they have a lot of it, is able to withstand losing a guy that's going to give you about 170 innings and 200 strikeouts. Like, that's not nothing. But if the Brewers are going to win the World Series, they aren't going to win the World Series trying to do what the Dodgers do, right? So you try to thread that needle, and this is one of those ways you have to try to thread that needle.
So me and Molly are big baseball fans, but can you explain to Jim why we can't do it the way the Dodgers do, or why this is the way the Brewers operate? Because I think that would confuse a lot of people like Jim.
Jim's a Cubs fan, right, for what it's worth.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think there's just so many different levels to it right now in baseball, right? There are very few teams that can do it the way the Dodgers do it. I mean, the Cubs aren't going
they
to
don't do it
the way the Dodgers do it. That is a very exclusive group. Maybe the Mets. And really, for about any team outside of a New York market or an L.A. market to do that, you're talking about putting in your own private money and you're making a run for a couple of years, and then you got to pull back again because everybody wants to run their organization as a business, and so those things do matter, right?
Yeah.
And when you're in a smaller market, even though you sell a lot of tickets and everything else, those ancillary revenue pieces that trickle in New York and L.A. and some of the other places probably aren't going to make their way to you in the same way. Now, you got revenue sharing and all these other things. I mean, we could get really deep in the weeds this. But these are things we're going to hear a lot about in the next 12 months and probably beyond that. And I think we're going to learn a lot more about the economics of baseball at the end of the 2026 season.
All right, so with that said, what do you think the route is for the Brewers to get over the hump? Because they seem to be a good regular season team that can get to the postseason, but it doesn't seem like they have or had the firepower to get it done in the postseason.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say this year, look, they won a really good competitive series with the Cubs. I mean, that was a tremendous back-and-forth series. And then they ran up against a really good team of the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. A lot of teams were going to struggle against the Dodgers. Everybody else did, too. They were the only ones still standing in the end. So I don't know that it's some crazy thing the Brewers have to do to get over the hump, right? I think you stay healthy, you continue to build your depth, but I think there's this long vision you have to have when you're the Brewers of how do we continue to put ourselves in position to get to the postseason and make a run. So then you're trying to be as competitive as you can be at the big league level, which they've been able to do that at a very high clip, but then you're also hoping that these secondary waves are coming through the minor league system. So the Brewers are going to acquire their talent through the international market, which they've done a really nice job with, especially if you look at the last 7 to 8 years. They've done an outstanding job in that regard, and acquiring talent via trade, and of course the domestic MLB amateur draft as well. That's where they're going to acquire most of their talent. They're probably not going to build their team through free agency, or at least not the bulk of it, right? So when you look at Jesus Madé, who's the number three or number four prospect in baseball, depending who you read, Luis Peña and all these guys, it not only gives you other potential stars that hopefully can be on the same trajectory as a Jackson Churio in the next couple of years, it also gives you a lot of currency if you want to go acquire somebody at the deadline, too. When you start having a lot of redundancy at different positions throughout your farm system, then it gives you a little bit more freedom to make a big move here. They haven't done that the last couple of years, and I understand that. But I think if you have three or four really good shortstops that are sprinkled from ages 19 through 23 in your minors, you might be a little bit more willing to give up one of those pieces to get something back at the deadline and hopefully put yourself over the hump in that scenario.
It seems like a lot of teams in baseball are positioning themselves. You kind of talked about this. There could be some sort of work pause or stoppage, you know, whether it's teams not signing longer-term deals or some free agents sitting out there. I don't know. You don't need to predict what you think is going to happen, but it's just more the idea of, are you expecting wholesale changes of a hard cap, or is it fine-tuning the system that exists? And the Dodgers are obviously working loopholes that other teams aren't willing to with deferred money. And yeah, you look at the money that actually getting paid to some of these guys each year is pretty wild. So in your mind, is this going to be more of a complete restructuring of what the pay and the breakout of salaries could be like in Major League Baseball, or is it going to be more of like a fine-tuning?
Yeah, I wish I knew that.
Yeah.
I think it's the question everybody's asking themselves right now. Like, is this going to be a huge wholesale changes, or is this, hey, let's tighten up what we're doing right now. There's ways to improve upon it. I think there's something to be said for the second part. I think some of the revenue sharing and the luxury tax and some of those things, maybe you could go a little further with it.
Yep.
And maybe that helps benefit some more of that trickle down, and maybe there's things you do about a percentage of that gets spent on payroll. I don't know. People way right. smarter than me are going to try to figure that out and hash that out. But I think those are all the things we're going to be hearing a lot about over the next year, maybe year plus, hopefully not, and we'll see where that all lands. But it's going to be fascinating, that's for sure.
I just ask because I think all of us, no matter you're a fan of a baseball, want to have baseball. So that's why it's more of like the fastest and effective solution is the solution that I want. I think, well, Matt might be, but I'm old enough to remember, you know, the work stoppage and how awful that was and how it really slowed down momentum. And honestly, changed baseball. I think it went from more of a national sport to everyone's much more of a fan of their local team. It's still a very popular sport, but instead of having the national reach, it's like Brewer fans are diehard Brewer fans and maybe care less about a Yankees-Red Sox game than they did maybe 25, 30 years ago. So I think that's what we're all trying to avoid is some sort of hard, long stoppage of baseball, because that was brutal for the game and brutal for fans.
Yeah, nobody wants that. I mean, nobody wants that. Everybody wants to get this thing figured out and not miss any games. And look, they had a work stoppage. It didn't cost any games, but going into 22, the last CBA, and it was a little contentious for a little bit there, but they figured it out when they had to, and we played a couple of doubleheaders that were pre-scheduled, and that was different, but we got all 162 in, and we missed, like, the first week of the season. So if something like that happens, it's not going to blunt momentum, I don't think, for the sport. And I think the sport's headed in a really good direction right now. I mean, the product on the field is as good as it's been in a long time. The pitch clock, I was a skeptic of it. It's been great.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no problem saying I was dead wrong on the pitch clock. It's added to the game. It's made it just flow so much better. And
less time really for you, though, and in between pitches.
He doesn't get paid by the hour. He's fine.
Have your conversations.
No,
right?
it is true. Like, there was some adjustment to that for sure. When I was working with Uke, you didn't love it as much then because you're like, oh, man, I would love for these guys to take 2 minutes in between pitches right now and just let him do his thing and work his magic. But for somebody like me that maybe doesn't have the Rolodex of stories that Bob Uecker has, it works out pretty well.
So I think I'll just ask this question for the group. How special was it to work with a legend like Uecker?
Today would have been his 92nd birthday. Wow. And so I was thinking about this yesterday because I was thinking about his birthday today. And I was thinking about the phrase, you know, there's not a day that goes by where you don't think about him. And I was like, but there's like not an hour that goes by for me still where I don't think about him. I mean, he just had such a huge impact. And I know I can speak for Jeff and Josh and Kent Sommerfeld and everybody in our booth, really. He just had such a huge impact on us. And, I mean, yeah, we had a blast. And we laughed more than any other booth in the history of baseball, I can promise you that. But it was also just the loyalty he had to us, the fact that you just knew he was always going to be there for you. He was your biggest cheerleader. If you had a good call that was a walk-off or something in extra innings and you were on the call because he wasn't, he was the first person to throw his arm around you and tell you, even if it wasn't your best call, like, wow, great call, Grinny. And you're like, oh, I thought I could have done this better, but that's fine. Yeah. You know, it just felt good to hear Bob Uecker say it. So, just such a special thing that I pinched myself every day that I got to go to work with him. And I will say, I'll give myself this much credit. I never once took it for granted. And I think in anything in life, you do something enough, you can start to take it for granted. But yeah. I just always reminded myself, don't take this for granted. Yeah. It's really cool. It's really special. And, thinking about him a lot today. Would have been his 92nd birthday. And I called Judy on the way here and got a chance to talk to her a little bit. And, he was the best. Love him dearly. Think about him all the time.
Lane, I think – oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just – like, what's your favorite Uke story?
Oh, man. There's so many of them. I hope this doesn't take too long. I'll try to make it a quick –
we're fine.
Quick
you got
story,
all the time in the world.
I don't know if this is my favorite, but this is the one that's coming to mind right now. And it's kind of a behind-the-scenes story, which I think is fun for the fans because this is the stuff he would do with his partners. We were in Pittsburgh, and it was one of those trips where Uke went on the trip, I went on the trip, and Levering went. And rarely were the three of us on a trip together. This is early on in my time. I think it was in 2018. And we're in Pittsburgh, and they have an in-stadium host. And great guy. His name's Joe. We've gotten to know him over the years. And for whatever reason, Levering and him were the first to kind of become friends. And then it became like this joke with us, like, hey, Joe and you are tight. Like, you guys are friends. I mean, it's just the in-stadium host. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we're at dinner one night, and Joe walks in and kind of smacks Jeff on the back with his papers and says, hi, Jeff, and then walks right by me. And I am just, like, joking. I'm like, I'm so mad. I feel so spurned. He's not even paying attention to me. And so the next day we're again at dinner, and I'm sitting across from Uke, and Joe walks in, and he sees me, and he beelines right for him, and he's like, hey, Lane, and he gives me a hug, and I'm like, I'm so confused. And I'm like, good to see you, Joe. You know, I think this is the first conversation we've ever actually had. And I just look up, and I look across the table, and Uke is just doubled over laughing with his head. Because Uke had approached him in the tunnel an hour earlier and said, hey, Joe, I know that you're always saying hi to Levering, but, you know, Grindel is kind of hurt by that. And he just took it one step further and he set the whole thing up. And so then, you know, it just that was the kind of stuff he did all the time with us. It was so much fun. Yeah, he was.
That's awesome.
He was, yeah.
That was a great story. Lane, thank you so much for the time. We'll get out and enjoy the Dugout Club, and appreciate taking the time to join us.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
We're looking forward to hearing your calls on ESPN Madison this upcoming baseball season.
Sounds
this is Jim Matt and Mike, presented by Coors Light.